Night Media Studios and Paranormal Underground Magazine. Welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Rick Hale and Karen Frazier.
It is Thursday night, and if you can hear my voice, you are exactly where you need to be. I am your host, Rick Hale, and this is Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. Welcome. Tonight, we got a really good show lined up for you guys. We're going to be talking to Rosemary Breen, who's going to be coming to us all the way from the land down under as in Australia. So look out for falling hobbits and axe-wielding orcs, but that's New Zealand. Pardon my ignorance. So we're going to be talking to her later on. She is the founder of the website Psychic Revolution. She also has a survey that she does. I took the survey and, I really liked it. I thought it told a lot about myself. And so, we're going to, after we go on break, we're going to talk to her for a little bit. But, this week I had some really interesting stuff that happened, everyone. I made a discovery this week that I think will revolutionize not only the paranormal world, but will also make Apple a ton of cash. Apparently, it seems that you can use your iPod, your iPhone, or anything of that nature. If you go to the voice memo, you can use that as a voice recorder, and it will run indefinitely. And like on my iPod Nano, I think I have a fourth or fifth generation iPod Nano, and it is the crispest, cleanest sound that I have ever heard. So if you believe what you see on TV and you go out there and you buy thousands of dollars worth of audio equipment with multi-directional mics, you're getting stolen from. You're getting robbed. So anyways, also this week, as everybody knows, I've recently quit McHenry County Paranormal Research Group. I can't say anything bad about them. They are a great group. I really enjoyed my time working with them. But a few differences that couldn't be resolved. And, it was on both sides, and that's okay. However, I am going to be working with a friend, and I mentioned her on the air before. Her name's Nancy Laporta. She is quite possibly the most amazing psychic since Daniel Douglas Hume. And, if you don't know anybody, if you don't know who that person is, he is considered the 19th century Gandalf. He's a Scottish psychic. You float around the room. I've never seen Nancy do that, however, but maybe one of these days I will. So I'm going to be doing some work with her, and I'm going to be doing some work with the metaphysical shop that she works at called Howl at the Moon. It's in Richmond, Illinois, which is in, northern Illinois. It's one of the oldest towns. And hopefully I will be able to share evidence now. I won't be strictured by any kind of ridiculous, probably wouldn't stand up in court, but I'm not going to put up with it anyways. All the stuff that I had to do with MCPRG with their contracts and non-disclosure. So hopefully soon I'll be able to share some stuff with the listeners as well as with the readers, and so nobody will think that I am a fraud. So what we're going to do is I'm going to just show you just how real I am, hopefully very soon. So what we're going to do is we're going to go to break. We're going to go to break a little bit early, and when we come back, we're going to be talking with Rosemary Breen of Psychic Revolution. She's coming to us all the way from Australia. So stick around and come on back and listen. It's going to be live.
If you are a small business owner, you are paying too much for products and services. Do not spend your hard-earned cash on items you can get on trade. UTXTrade.com was formed specifically so you can trade your products or services with other companies on the network for items like advertising, computer repair, office furniture, printing, hotel stays, and much more. For more information, please visit UTXTrade.com. That's UTXTrade.com, a proud sponsor of Paranormal League of America.
Hi, this is Karen Frazier, author of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, a new book from Ghost Night Media. In summer of 2009, I visited Wellington, Washington, a former railroad town in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States occurred. 96 people lost their lives. What I found there changed my life forever. Before I visited Wellington, I wasn't sure that I believed in ghosts or even in the human soul. Now I know for sure that ghosts are real and that our souls go on after we die. You can read all about my experiences at Wellington in my new book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, which is on sale at Amazon.com. To learn more, visit avalancheofspirits.com.
Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
Hi, everyone. It's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at ParanormalUG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
Will you save me from falling? See- station identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
Operating frequency
on ztalkradio.com. The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ZTalk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
And welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. I am your host, Rick Hale, and as I mentioned before the break, joining us tonight is going to be Miss Rosemary, Rosemary Breen of psychicrevolution.com. Let me tell you a little bit about Rosemary, so in case you're not familiar with who she is. Rosemary is a creator of Psychic Revolution, a name that she chose to reflect her view of what needs to happen across the paranormal industry. The website is a natural extension of her academic research into the paranormal. Rosemary completed her Master of Education at Monash. Am I pronouncing that correct, Rosemary?
You're getting close, but I'd call it Monash.
Monash, okay. University in Australia. So tonight we're going to be talking to her about not only just her website, but also she has a survey that she does at her website, and yours truly took it. So Rosemary Breen, welcome to the underground.
Thank you, Rick. It's lovely to be here.
It's very nice to have you. Now, I went actually quite a few times to your website of psychicrevolution.com, and I was very impressed with it because it takes a very down-to-earth look at the paranormal, and personally, that's what I'm all about. But, first off, I want to talk a little bit about the survey. Now, I took the survey last week. I don't think I finished it because I had to go upstairs and get my little guy who was getting up from a nap at the time. But it seems to be really quite intensive from some of the questions that I answered. And like I said, I didn't get a chance to finish it, and hopefully I will. But how did you come about starting the website Psychic Revolution, and where did the survey come from? Was that just a natural extension or something that you added later on?
Well, there's lots of things to talk about in there, Rick. Look, just let me say at the outset that I've lived with the paranormal all my life.
Sure.
And I think I'm a little bit older than you from what I can understand. So, I've lived with it. So it's always been there, bubbling away through everything that I've done, but I've never kind of brought it into the foreground until recently. So it was always like, well, I came into the world with a knowing and didn't need to do a lot more with it until now. So it's almost like a luxury of perhaps my mature age that I can do it now, spend the time, indulge something that I'm really interested in, whereas I had to do a lot of other stuff on the physical plane before I could get to this. So it came about, I was thinking back, when I did my first degree, I know I would have loved to have done something in parapsychology.
Sure.
But we're talking 70s and we're talking Australia, and it was not on the agenda. There was nothing. So it's like, okay, so what's plan B? Of course, plan B is to become an accountant.
Okay. Well, that's kind of weird because usually accountants are, kind of boring, but it's like, you're more or less a parapsychologist, so it's like, man, you really add that interest in there. So do you have, spirits crunch the numbers for you, too?
Well, it's quite interesting, the conversations I used to get into on Friday nights, especially after work. But I think that's the thing, is that because it's always been part of my life, people have come to accept that I will just flip from talking about numbers and profits and bottom lines to talking about ghosts and whatever. And I see it just as a continuum. I don't see any great difference between all of the specters and those who have stuck with me for my many years of life.
Rosemary, allow me to just, interrupt you for a minute, for my own edification as well as for the edification of our listeners as well. You say that this is something that has been with you your whole life. Now, did you have an experience really early on in life that turned you on to this and it's like just kind of blew open the doors of perception for you?
I think what you're alluding to there is some of the things that are coming up in the survey.
Okay.
Some respondents who actually get to the end of it then email me and say, I have so wanted to tell my story. I have lived with this for so many years, and God, this is cathartic. I feel so good to have expressed so much about what I've experienced. So for me, yes, I think it does. My sense of being when I was born was, and I hope this doesn't turn people off, was I didn't want to be here. I was born not wanting to be in the coarseness of the earth's energy. Struggled for a long time to get my head around all of this. And then gradually as I grew, I guess a lot of children do shut down, so I must have just shut down.
Sure.
But within my family environment, it was always in the background, although nobody practices as a consultant. It was always there, and it was okay to explore it. So I think that's what happened was I came in with a sense of, gosh, did I make the right decision here? Did I get off at the wrong floor? Should I be somewhere else?
Right.
So I struggled with that, and a lot of spirits do when they come through. But then gradually I just grounded. So a lot of my life challenges have been in grounding myself. I think probably hence the economics and the accounting. You couldn't get, much more grounded, but then I think you're a new parent. Is that right, Rick?
Yeah, actually, our little guy is going to be celebrating his first birthday this Saturday.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
I think being a parent is also an incredibly grounding experience.
That's absolutely true. I mean, it's like, you know, everything that I've ever done in the past was always like, you know, all right, it's not a big deal. But now it's like anything and everything that I do, I want to create a legacy for Theo, because really, the only thing that my biological dad gave me was my name. I want to give him just so much more. I want people to look back when he's 30 years old and say, yeah, you know what? I knew your old man. That guy was like a pioneer in the paranormal field. So that's what I'm hoping for him.
Bravo. That's excellent. I think that's fantastic. Yeah, no, go for it. With regards to the grounding of experiences, I think people who perhaps live a bit too much on the edge have stayed there and haven't kind of brought this stuff into the mainstream, whereas I've spent, 50-odd years mainlining this whole stuff. I just want it to be very normal. And so as I was saying, I caught up with some friends from school the other day, and, you know, nothing like your school friends to know you.
Sure.
And they said, you know, you were so different and we didn't get you, but where do we get you now?
I get that all the time. I work with some of the people that I work with. I work mainly with young kids, and not just they're the clients, but they're also, you know, the people that I work with. And they look at me sometimes. They're like, "Oh my God, you were just the biggest nerd I've ever met." So yeah, I know how that is. You know, people are like, "Wow, you're just kind of weird, man." You know,
you just go on right ahead and you do your thing. But you know,
yeah, exactly.
You wait long enough. So many people are. I think whether it is a later life experience, but a lot of people are coming around and saying, you know, I'm actually getting what you've been talking about all these years.
Sure.
You know? Yeah, so that's a nice feeling.
You know, I don't know what the environment is like in Australia concerning the paranormal, but, you know, just maybe about 7 or 8 years ago, it exploded here in the United States. I know that there's a couple of television shows, and there's one that I actually like. It's a 3-man team. It's like one female and two guys, and I've actually watched it on RIP YouTubes, and I can't remember the name of it, but it's a great, great television show, and they take everything seriously. What's it like in Australia? Is it as big as it is in the United States?
Well, look, my answer would be I don't think so. I really don't. And that's based on my basic market research, but also on the people who have responded to the survey and what they've said. I don't think Australia is up there. And if we go off on an aside, although I was born here in Australia and I've lived a lot of my life here, I actually feel my spiritual home is in England.
Okay.
And I've spent a lot of time there. I feel very comfortable in that energy. So, again, an Australian energy is a very different place to be. It's a harsh environment, you know, the driest continent, blah, blah, blah. So there is a rawness of the energy here. And my perception is that people are probably not as interested in it. If you put aside people like the Aborigines, the Australian Aboriginals, they're a different kettle of fish.
Right. You know, I did want to talk to you about that because here in our country, with the Native Americans, you know, the Indian tribes, I myself come from a mixed race. My dad's side of the family is Irish and Cherokee. And, you know, so I grew up with a lot of different kinds of stories. And, you know, if you want to touch on it now, we can wait till later on. I wanted to touch on, you know, down in Australia, what the Aborigines call the dreaming. I've always been fascinated with that. With the dreaming, is that like a purely just a paranormal soup of like really awesome stuff?
My understanding is that there is a very much a paranormal angle to their existence, and of course it's getting lost a lot as they try to acclimatize or assimilate with the Western way.
Sure.
But my understanding, some very unusual things happen. For example, they can be in two places at once. Now, this is not the people that are living in the shanty towns on the outskirts of towns. These are the people who are still living nomadic existences as they did for the last 20, 40,000 years. So there is this type of thing where the spirit is in two places. They have things like the pointing of the bone. They do believe in the power of suggestion. So, yes, I think some of these ancient cultures have a lot that can teach us, and that certainly came through in my survey. You know, when people were asked, one of the questions which you mightn't have got to, Rick, at the end was, would you like to perhaps give your interpretation of why the paranormal exists? Because I feel scientists don't know the answers, you know. Religion right. doesn't have the answers, so maybe right. maybe the man in the street has it. So,
well, I think that's what it is. You know, Charles Fort is, you know, he's, I'm sure you know who he is. I mean, he's sort of a, you know, a literary god in the paranormal field. He's one of the first people that, you know, sat down and took the stuff seriously. And one of the things with him was like, you have to go back to the normal guy, because scientists, or the priestcraft, as he called it, they're just not going to take this stuff seriously.
No.
Now, I don't know how that is in Australia, but a couple months ago, I got an email from a guy in Sydney, claimed to be a biochemical scientist, and it was, you know, it was an Australian email address asking me if I knew of any, you know, good books or good authors for him to read, because he wants to get involved in the paranormal. And it's like, here's a guy who, you know, has got a humongous education, and he's coming to a guy with a high school diploma asking about this kind of stuff. So, you know, it's, and I think that's why I asked, you know, what it's like in Australia, because apparently Cheap Trick in the 70s was, you know, pretty huge in Japan, and apparently we're huge in Australia. So that's why I asked the question.
Yeah, absolutely. You put up another point there, Rick, which I found when I decided to come back and discovered that universities actually were talking about the paranormal a little bit. This was like in the about 2005. Mm-hmm. I actually got warned off of it. I remember there was a guy who was just retired as the dean of the medical faculty of one of the universities here in Melbourne. He actually had a long conversation with me, and he said, look, this is a career-limiting move. If you start moving into the paranormal, then you will find it hard, you know. You'll never eat in this town again.
Right.
So it's interesting that that was a fatherly word of advice.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't say, I don't believe in this. I think he did from his own experiences, obviously in the medical profession.
But now, do you think that it's because they're afraid?
No, I think what it is universities are all about funding, and so it can be very limiting if you stick your head above the parapet and you say, I'm actually a parapsychologist, or I deal in that realm. But what tends to happen is, from a research point of view, it's the people who are looking at their second or their third career, like myself, who are quite happy to move into it. They've kind of done other things in other areas that have set them up as being credible. They've survived the test of time. They've excelled as, you know, biologists or physicists or accountants or whatever. Mm-hmm. And now it's me time, my time, and this is the area that I really want to study. So when I said to him, I don't mind. I said, this is my last career. I don't mind. they can do what they like. But I thought his advice was interesting because through my survey, another guy contacted me and he just finished his psychology. And he said, I want to go on and do my master's. And he said, but I'm being told not to. And I said, I really think you should establish yourself in another area. Mm-hmm. It will be good for the whole research thing of paranormal. Sure. It'll also be good for you as well. Right. So that would be my advice to anyone who's thinking, you know, I'm an undergrad, I'm 20, 21, I just want to get out there. My advice would be to just wait and stay broad a bit longer.
Yeah. See, now a huge problem that we seem to, you know, run into in here in the United States is that people see the paranormal now as a path to being famous. Now, I've been in the field. I'm 37 years old. I've been in the field since I was about 8 years old after I saw my first ghost. And I don't mean to like sound. I've actually had people say, "Well, you sound like a jealous asshole, Rick." But no, it's just that it seems that the people that are being noticed are the people, these pseudoscientists, who they get on television, they start spouting all their stupid crap. And one of the things that really bothers me is the psychic issue. Mm-hmm. Now, for 130 beautiful years of psychical research history, thanks to the guys in the SPR and the London Ghost Club, mm-hmm. Who started all this. I mean, they are the fathers of modern psychical research.
Brilliant.
And you get these. You know, it's like, no, psychics aren't real. Psychics are all full of crap. But I think that when mainstream science actually finally takes a look at it, they are going to find that people who have these abilities, that there is some kind of biochemical component involved. And the reason I say that is for two reasons in my own research. One, it seems that people with any kind of psychic ability, it runs in their family, very mm-hmm. heavily in their family. Two, on a few investigations that I did with McHenry County Paranormal Research Group, when I was with them, we had a one of those thermal imaging cameras. And while I was filming or taking pictures of our two psychic mediums, one I've remained extremely good friends with, her name's Nancy Laporte. I'm going to be doing a lot of work with her in the future. I noticed something very, very strange. While the rest of their face was a normal color, there was this patch of cold air, this patch of coldness right above their nose. It was like a perfectly round patch of cold. It was colder than the rest of the face. Now, I know that, you know, for years, I'm a Buddhist. So mm-hmm. we believe in, of course, the third eye, just like, you know, the Hindus. And I've always kind of wondered something. Is there this biological component that's right there that for whatever reason, when it activates, becomes cold? Now, what I want to know is, does it bother you as a longtime paranormal researcher that you get all these people that are like, no, this is not real. This is not a fact. This is all bupkis. We don't need psychics. They're full of shit, pardon my French. And I hope that doesn't get me. Probably not from Scotty, because Scotty is probably a psychic gentleman. So what do you think about that when people say, you know, it's all crap?
I think we're getting close to the truth when people start saying that, because I think we're actually pushing some buttons.
Okay, I agree.
To me, it's like at a dinner party, you don't talk about religion, you don't talk about politics. Well, you can throw the paranormal in there as well. It is likely to divide any group of people. There is passion. Mm-hmm. People do not remain neutral. As soon as I tell people what I do, there's an outpouring of stories. Okay,
yeah, I get that too.
Yeah, very few people will go, I don't believe. And mm-hmm. if do say that to me, and I'm like you, I'm not trying to be cocky. We call it cocky in Australia.
No, we call it cocky here too.
Oh, good. It's not belief doesn't come into it for me because I was born with a knowing. If you go back through my survey, Rick, you'll notice there is not one word like belief or believe in it. I refuse to have any word like that in it.
I did notice that because when I think of the word belief or believe, for me that implies faith. I don't really have faith in this, but I do know what I've seen.
Yes.
And experienced.
A mental shift between belief and know, isn't there?
Sure, you absolutely.
Know. And that's it. I mean, a lot of that's the other thing. When I started sort of setting up my thesis and what I was going to do, I had to go back and see. You have to build on from previous research. And I looked at what had been done, and so little had been done on anything that didn't involve the word belief. There were so many surveys done on what you believe you've done. It's like, no, I don't need this. We don't need another survey on beliefs.
Sure.
Because beliefs are something that are acceptable apparently by mainstream psychology. Okay, so that's as far as mainstream, for example, in Australia can go. We can talk about your beliefs, but we can't actually talk about what you've actually seen, done, or experienced. So I thought, I'm going to blow that word out of the water.
Right. And you know what I find it's very interesting about that? Whenever you say that, it's like, oh, you know, I know what I've seen. I know here in this country when you talk to these, you know, the guys, it's like, oh, yeah, I got involved with this about 5 years ago. Well, that's probably because of a television show that you got involved with this. But it's like when you say, well, this is what I've seen, this is what I've experienced, they automatically go about trying to disprove it rather than saying, oh, you know what? That's really great. Now, when I was 8 years old, I saw the spirit of Mrs. MacNett. She was the lady who owned the house before my parents or grandparents moved in. It was in the north side of Chicago. And I tell people that story, and they're like, come on, did you really see that? It's like, would I dedicate 30 years of my life to a field of research if I'm going to lie about seeing the spirit of Mrs. MacNett? Are you serious?
That's right. It says more about you than it does about me.
Right. Exactly. It's fine if you want to not, you know, believe in somebody's, you know, personal story. That's fine because it's not something that you can show, but at least don't go into the area of trying to be a debunker. And, you know, for those who don't really know what the real definition of debunk is, usually it has to do with completely making fun of somebody until they want to cry. That's what real debunking is.
You just don't need that, honestly. For a person to open up and talk about such a private, I think it's a private experience. Even if you're experiencing it in public or with someone else, it's a very personal experience. And if somebody opens up about it, the worst thing you could do is ridicule them.
Sure. That's actually quite true, and it's with anything. It's any kind of personal belief, any kind of personal faith. You know, people, they start off with like, oh my God, that's the most bizarre thing that I've ever heard. Like when I tell people why I'm into what I'm into, I either get, you know, one of three things. I get that they want to tell me their personal experience, they want to hear more, or they call me a gigantic nerd. Now, they say that like it's a bad thing, and it's not to me. I am a nerd, and I have no problem.
Isn't there a saying about respecting nerds because one day they'll be your boss?
Exactly. Thank you very much. I cannot agree more. But it's the whole idea of, I want to touch on your survey because I did find your survey very interesting, although the future world's greatest psychical researcher was waking up at the time, so I didn't get a chance to finish it. But
He had needs that needed to be attended to.
He needed to have a poopy diaper change. He needed to have done.
But, intuition? Is that mother's intuition or what?
it's mother's intuition. Now that's not a psychic ability. I don't know what is. My wife is amazing with it. With like your survey, it really goes into quite a lot of detail concerning what people believe, what they see, what they believe that they've seen. You know, let's talk about that a little bit. Like, you know, some of the questions that you, what are some of the questions that you feel are the most intensive with your survey?
If you remember, I had to base my survey on previous work.
Sure.
So when I was going back through the literature, I came across a guy called John Palmer.
Now, I have heard of that name, yes.
Right. Now, John did a survey, I think it was in, say, South I'm going to say South Carolina, mm-hmm. in about the 1970s. And it was a mail survey, a postal survey. So you can see how far we've come. It was a postal survey, and it was, I think it was the local township, and it was a group of students. Now, okay. there's lots of problems with the sampling there, but we won't go into that. But basically, some of the questions that I've asked in the survey had to be kind of replicating what John had already done, but then I could add. So in a way, that's why the survey became, you know, quite long. Yeah. Can I say to people who are listening, it can be done very quickly, 10 minutes, you know.
Sure.
Or you can spend as long as you like. So what I find is, it was kind of a new area to go into because I wanted to marry the data with the narrative, and that's a bit unusual. The qualitative data with the quantitative, that was even a stretch for the university because, you know, if you look at it, the people who are into statistics do not wish to talk to the people who are only into narratives.
Sure.
So here am I coming in with this weird topic, then I'm saying I actually need, for credibility's sake, I need to allow people to tell their story, but I also need to quantify it.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, it's like the university was very accommodating. They just, doors opened and I thought, boy, am I in the right spot for this. Doors opened and they said, yeah, you know, knock yourself out, go for it. So the survey is quite long. I think the meaty parts are the narratives where people are given the chance to write about three of their experiences.
Now, can you legally talk about some of those experiences? Because, just like I do, a lot of people in the paranormal field still really believe in the personal experience as being, evidence. So, mm-hmm. I mean, can you talk about, some of those personal experiences?
What I found as a generalization is how unemotive people were in speaking about the topic. There was so few people from what I would call the lunatic fringe. It was so refreshing. Sure. It was like, I'm really preaching to the choir here. These people sat down in a very matter of fact, you know, there would be occasional, dotted lines and stuff where they'd put out their expletives. But in the main, these people were incredibly rational. Mm-hmm. They wrote it in a documentary type form. It was chronological. It was a dream, an absolute dream from a researcher's point of view that people, because to me, we don't need any more sensationalism in the paranormal field.
Thank you, Rosemary. God bless you. I love you. Thank you for saying that.
Thank you. Well, I am so grateful. Look, in the first round of surveys, I reckon there was 4,000. We collected those. It went viral. It was wonderful. And sure. again, it was a leap of faith. It's like, how is anybody going to find me? So we got 4,000 of those. And in the second round, I think, there's probably another 4,000 or so. So there's lots of data coming through. But the consistent thing is it's attracting people who are probably like you and I, very mm-hmm. rash, very sane, very, very level-headed, mm-hmm. and who are just going about their daily lives, and oh, by the way, we've had a bleed through from another dimension, or I've had a time shift, or whatever the reason is, and oh, by the way, I continue to live. And yeah. I think that's wonderful.
Right. Well, oftentimes in the paranormal field, you hear of stuff that's called high strangeness. I'm sure you've heard of that, correct?
I have, yes. Not a lot.
Right. Personally, high strangeness has touched me. My uncles were friends with guys from Antioch, Illinois. Their family and some of their neighbors actually experienced an episode of high strangeness. It's called around here we call it the Grass Lake Incident. And, when people, they talk about these high strangeness, and you talk about the lunatic fringe, these are people that sound like the lunatic fringe. They've been abducted by aliens. Things are visiting them in the night. They see monsters. They have poltergeist type activity. And it all seems to center around UFOs. Now, you talk about extra-dimensional beings. Let's talk about that for a second. I'm very much an old-fashioned psychical researcher. I'm very much old school. I still adhere to many of the rules and regulations of England's SPR. I still believe in what it is that they did. Mm. And it just seems like with this high strangeness, it's people come across with these bizarre stories and they start talking about, well, it was an interdimensional being, or it was a time shift, or it was, something from, a super string theory. And I got to admit to you, I'm not a quantum physics-y kind of guy. I still believe that ghosts are the spirits of the dearly departed. And what are your thoughts about let's start with ghosts and spirits and hauntings. What do you think that a ghost is?
Yes, I agree with you. I think it is the spirit of the departed. And it's a matter of whether you can actually interact with them. See, on the one hand, you've got those that literally are not aware of our being, and then you've got the others who are actually hanging out to have some, social dialogue. Mm-hmm. So there are two different kind of sources of the spirit. I do tend to believe that those who want to be found are actually looking to pass over, and they are actually reaching out to do that.
Sure. There's a reason that so many electronic voice phenomena, probably 80 to 85% I once read, where somebody is saying, help me. There's a reason it says that, because they are looking for help.
They are trapped, exactly. Yes. Just going back to your UFO thing, about a year ago here in Melbourne, a guy got his PhD in UFOs.
Really?
I was having my breakfast and I nearly choked. I thought, my God, I want to shake this guy's hand.
Right.
So, yeah, Melbourne University is like a brownstone university, very traditional. And here it is, he's got the first PhD in ufology.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's great. That makes it a little bit more mainstream, a little bit more acceptable. That's fantastic. And I can imagine his stories. I think he's turned it into a book. But it couldn't have been too emotional, because the academics wouldn't tolerate it.
Right.
Yeah. So now back to the ghosts and stuff. I always see that as kind of like the layperson's entree into the paranormal.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? I started, my first question in the survey is probably not even a paranormal experience. It's about deja vu. But there was a reason for that. It was a very gentle introduction, because I have no idea. When you don't have the person who's doing the survey in the same room as you, you have mm-hmm. to be so careful to pace and lead. So the whole survey has been set up so I gently lead through. So we started with something very innocuous like deja vu. Now, whether that's...
Deja vu, it's so weird. I at least have deja vu once a day. I'm not kidding you. I have it usually like once a day. I don't know if I'm psychic or whatever, but it's a very strange occurrence with me.
Do you call that paranormal to yourself then, Rick?
That's one of the things that it's like, I don't know. And I'm going to be honest with you. I had an old martial arts teacher who used to say to me that there are three words that you should never be afraid of saying, because they are three of the strongest words in the English language. I don't know.
Exactly. And you know what? The world didn't end, did it? You said, I don't know, and the world didn't end.
Yeah, exactly. It's so funny, because it's like people look to us for answers, and when you tell them, I don't know, they're like, oh, yeah, whatever. All right, I'm just going to go back to, eating my burger and fries and drinking my beer. I don't care what you have to say.
Exactly. And then don't you wish that we could say things like, well, they're rewriting the laws of physics. What I mm-hmm. learned in class in the 1970s is no longer being taught in my daughter's class. Because it has changed that quickly. But did the physicists have to hang their heads in shame? No. We just kept moving. So that's the idea, is because the paranormal, everyone seems to have a claim to it or an opinion about it, far more so than chemical reactions or anything else. Nobody's got an opinion on those things. But everybody has an opinion. So therefore it becomes very much in the public domain, and therefore it's more scrutinized. But there are other areas of science that should equally be scrutinized and be brought to account.
Mm-hmm. No, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
I oftentimes tell people that when it comes to, psychic ability, that it kind of goes back to when we were, and I say this quite a bit on the show, and I'm sure it's ad nauseum and people are sick and tired of hearing it by now, but it's like, I think it goes back to it's an evolutionary advancement on the, holy shit, there's a saber-toothed tiger standing behind me. evolutionary speaking, we had to become aware of everything that was behind, you know, around us, because we shared, you know, we were night predators, early man, and we shared that time with other night predators. So we had to develop that awareness, that kind of like, you know, sort of like your mind reaching out to everything that's going on around you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even when I tell that to people, and a lot of people in the paranormal field who are really dogmatic about psychics, they're like, that's one of the goofiest things I've ever heard. But no, it actually makes sense. And that is that biochemical component.
Yeah, exactly. It's going back to the chemical reactions in the body. And let's face it, at the end of the day, what are we? We're a bunch of hormones.
Yes.
Honestly, it's so much of what we are is a result of our chemical reactions. Sure. And what stopped me in my research was where one of the scientists was saying, do you know what? We don't actually even have a legitimate definition for consciousness. We don't even know what consciousness is. It's right. Like, okay, but we bow at the altar of psychology and say, aren't they great? And yet the cornerstone of this whole thing is awareness and consciousness, and yet we don't actually have a definition that would stand up.
Sure.
That to me is like, well, back off from parapsychology, will you, and go find another bone to chew.
Sure. Yeah, and it seems to be with any field of science that, you know, you get the biologists that say, no, you know, we're just a bunch of shaved monkeys and meat bags, and we don't have a soul. And then you got the chemists who are like, you know, all this stuff that you see with out of body experiences, near death experiences, whatever. That's just kind of like some weird chemical reaction in your brain to a given stimulus. And it's like, you know yourself from when you, from doing your survey that it's like, no, that is not. That's not exactly what it is. There is a
so many things. Let's face it, we are so complex. It cannot be one. And again, it goes back to research. You know, when you set up a thesis, I learned so much in doing it. Just in terms of how you have to couch your research in terms of what has gone on before, what is the current state and where you want to take it. So looking at it, so many of people in the 1960s and 70s and 80s were saying, you know, what I was learning in my philosophy class was being contradicted in my biology class. Right. It's like I had to have two hats. And because the two faculties would not get together, there was no way there was going to be a meeting of minds and an exchange. And that's part of the problem. Paranormal falls between so many faculties. Nobody wants to grab it and say, it's mine, it's an arts, it's mine, it's a science. There isn't. It just gets bounced around.
Sure. No, that's exactly it. And, you know, and with that being said, I think what we're going to do is, Rosemary, we're going to take a quick break. And, you know, when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about your survey and a little bit more about your own personal experiences in the paranormal. And, you know, because everybody likes to hear about the personal experience. So you're listening to Rosemary Breen. I am your host, Rick Hale, at Paranormal Underground Radio on ztalkradio.com. And we'll be back in just a few minutes.
Hi, it's John here from Haunted Cornwall FM in the UK. We will be on Z Talk now on a Sunday afternoon from 3 till 5 Eastern. We do talk all about the paranormal. Doesn't matter what it is, as long as it's paranormal. Audience are invited to get involved. If you've got questions, ask, because we've got a superb team that will be able to answer them. We don't sensationalise, we just tell the truth. However, if we find out there are fakes about, we will name and shame them. You've got to listen in to Haunted Cornwall FM from the UK on Z Talk, 3 till 5 Eastern.
The odds of a young girl being discovered by an industry insider while singing to herself pumping gas? 1 in 300 million. The odds of the daughter of a clergyman from Severn, Maryland spending 11 weeks at number one on the U.S. singles charts? 1 in 19 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of selling over 40 million records? 1 in 800,000. and the eyes of this musician and performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 150. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn the signs of autism at AutismSpeaks.org. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen.
Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Your assignment is to listen to The Buzz on Monday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Central on ztalkradio.com. This message will self-destruct.
Hi, I'm Joe Perry.
And Steven Tyler from Aerosmith, here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Yeah, you know we love it when the music does the talking.
And you know, the music stops when someone gets killed.
So never, 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 never let someone you know get behind the wheel if they've been drinking. So keep it real, keep it real. Friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
competition has taken notice.
Oh my God.
Good luck keeping up with us.
You're listening to Z-Talk Radio Network.
And welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. I am your host, Rick Hale, and we have, for about an hour, about 45 minutes now, have been having a fascinating conversation with Rosemary Breen, the founder and originator of the survey at psychicrevolutions.com. Welcome back to the show, everybody. Welcome back, Rosemary. Thank you for sticking around with us for another hour. Hopefully you can do that.
Yes, I can. Thanks, Rick. Yes.
You know, I'm just curious about something, and this is sort of an off topic, but, you know, up here we always call Australia the land down under. Now, right now, we're in December here in the United States, so we're going into our winter. You guys are going into your summer, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes,
see, I wanted to know, but is it still December or is it June? Sorry if I sound like an ignorant ass.
It's December, and okay. Basically, for example, our school year goes by the calendar year. So our kids are graduating at this time of the year and they will start a new class, a new level next year. So a lot of things happen around this time of the year. Things get wound up. And yes, we are in summer, but because Australia is probably even bigger than North America, I'd say, we have lots of climate zones, you know. So we've got the desert, we've got the tropical. So in some places it is raining buckets. Other places won't have seen rain for 20 years. Okay. So within that, you've got a land as big as America with lots of climates and microclimates. Yeah, but it's okay. We don't stand on our heads. We do speak English. I don't think we're...
Well, apparently.
...inclined. But, you know, we are fairly relaxed.
Watch out for falling hobbits and axe-wielding orcs, right? That's probably New Zealand, sorry, but, you know, just a little bit of a joke there.
Not like Australia. They don't. It's interesting, when I went to New Zealand for a visit, they looked to the motherland. The Kiwi's not going to agree with me, but... They look to England. They do not look to Australia. They look straight back to the motherland.
See, now I've noticed that. I've actually known a couple people from New Zealand, and their accent sounds a little bit more Londoner than it does Melbourne or Sydney. I thought that was very strange. In fact, when I first met them, I'm like, oh, well, what, you know, are you from North London? They're like, no, I'm from New Christchurch, New Zealand. It's like, I thought you thought your accent would be a little bit thicker than that.
We're not going to go there with that word.
Okay. Wow. All right. Back to the survey, ladies and gentlemen. Going back to the survey, you were talking about the lunatic fringe. Now, these are the people that have really bizarre experiences. What are some of the more bizarre experiences that you've heard?
Well, as I said, a lot of people... to me, we're just talking mainstream stuff. I have not found anything terribly bizarre. I have found patterns in what people do and experience, but nothing that has jarred me. I think my intuition is high. I'm highly attuned in that way. And if something jars, then I just query it. So I'll be reading something through and it'll be like, oh, yeah. It's like you're talking about something very mainstream. So very few jarring moments have come through. I had far more jarring experiences in terms of having to call in, threatened to call in lawyers when the survey was live the first time, because I was physically threatened. My safety was threatened by people.
Really?
Yes, okay. who took offence to this survey even existing. So you know you're getting somewhere when you're pushing these kind of buttons, but I had to get the university legal department involved.
Well, so, what was it that offended this person so?
It went back to the fact that it was his alma mater university, and how dare the university waste funding a research project like this. But this is actually quite a big thing. I mean, a lot of research is done with small groups in rooms or laboratories, but to actually have an international survey, that was fairly up there when we look back to 2006, 2007, when it was running live. So I think that was a big thing for the university to accept that. Sure. And it sets up a lot of research in the future. Like, you know, when you finish a survey, when you finish a thesis, you have to kind of flag what else somebody else could look at. And I think that's an interesting thing, Rick. My research uncovered loose ends, so many loose ends, and I had to name a few of them. So if I could just run through a couple of those. Anyone who's thinking about doing academic research, can I just throw these out? Because it's just crying out for it. I think you've already mentioned about the genetic component. That came through. That was a big one. People would say things like, I'm third generation Cherokee, or this has been passed down through my family generation to generation. So those patterns cannot be overlooked. Now, when I started to look at that, I was actually quite interested in pursuing this and finding out, has there been somebody, a geneticist, who's actually found something that might be of interest? Because not only were people talking about it runs in my family, they were also saying strongly it comes down the female line.
I have noticed that, yeah. In my family, though, it comes down the male line, which is really quite strange.
May I say, Rick, there's only one guy in the first round of surveys who actually said it was passed from my father to me. Right. No other male. And 40% of the participants in the first round were male. So interestingly, you think maybe paranormal, maybe it's a female type thing. No, 40% who turned up were men, and a lot of them were those who had experienced the paranormal. But none of them, except for one, because he stands out like you would, Rick, you'd stand out. No. he was the only one who said it came down the male line. Okay. So I thought to myself, is there a chromosomal, you know, is there something in this that scientists need to be looking at? Is it attached to the chromosomes in some way?
Mm-hmm.
No research, to my way of thinking, has ever been done on that.
No, I don't believe I've ever seen anything like that either.
No, so that sets up for me, for example, when I finished my research, the university offered me a PhD, which is big, and I said, no, I want to take this out of the university, get it off the library shelf and get it into the public domain, and I reckon I'd like to come back later. So there's lots of these things that I think I'd like to explore. Can I give you a couple of others, Rick?
Absolutely. Please do. It is a talk show.
Yeah, I know, but it's supposed to be two-way. So you just feel free to interject, okay?
Okay.
So another thing that I've got here on my list is pre-birth experiences.
Now, okay, what do you mean by pre-birth experience?
This one blew me out the water.
Okay.
If you go back to when you asked me about my own experiences, I said I was born knowing.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, I'm probably not the only one, but I've never known anyone really to have had the same sense.
Sure.
In the survey, there were about very few, maybe 200 at the most, incidents where people would talk about pre-birth experiences. The big one that came through is in near-death experiences.
Okay.
Now, if you can get a sense of where I'm headed, it's a very provocative subject.
Now, is this a reincarnation thing when you say pre-birth?
No. An awareness of the life they're about to enter or are entering, but in the womb.
I see.
And what came through is several people were aware that there were attempts to abort them.
Oh, goodness. Okay.
So you can see where we're headed. This is huge.
Right.
This is huge. If you think, when does consciousness start?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the pro-life lobby would be saying it starts at the moment of conception. The scientists would have a different interpretation. So there's this huge area where there are a couple of people who report that they were aware that a termination was tried and failed. So that's an area that could be pursued by somebody.
Okay.
The other one, of course, comes through is when do these experiences start? Now, you work with children, and that they are so much more aware than people give them credit for.
That's actually quite true. Now, it's so incredibly interesting that you say that, because I do have a couple of kids in where I work that have reported that they have had experiences in the cottage where I work. I can't really tell you where I work, because we have like these weird laws in our country. They're called the HIPAA laws. But they Is talk that about
the
yeah, it's kind of like a non-disclosure thing.
Yeah.
So they talk about seeing these dark shadows moving around their rooms, or they hear voices, or they hear footsteps. Now, I've worked there 11 years, and I have probably had more paranormal experiences working in this place. Like, for example, one night I had a Mountain Dew bottle lift off from a television stand and hit me square in the chest.
Right.
Yeah. Kids are definitely more aware of this thing, and the reason I think that is because, well, basically their brains haven't been filled with that crap that this kind of stuff can't possibly exist.
Well, I think they are more open, let's face it. Probably when we're all younger, we're more open to possibilities and potential and stuff.
Sure.
But I think also there is the element, and I don't think it's been proved, but like the poltergeist thing, where it's often to do with adolescence, there's an energetic turmoil. You know, the inner turmoil of the child is externalized into their environment, whether it's the throwing around the chairs or whether it's just when you're near an angry kid, you know it. So there is, to me, there is a very energetic component to all of this.
Sure.
And kids are raw. Children are raw. So the ones who are very young, the survey tended to show that more than 50% of people who had a paranormal experience had it before the age of like 13 or something. Very young.
Yeah, mine was at 8 when I first had it. So, but yeah, I've oftentimes heard that from, you know, many people, even a lot of people, especially a lot of people who have been in the field a lot longer than, you know, who would call themselves pre-TAPS researchers, you know, that they're like, yeah, I had my experience, man, when I was like 6 years old, and that just blew something up in my brain, and ever since then I've been fascinated with this stuff.
Okay, yeah. Well, I think that's it. It's obviously it's strong enough for them to realize it's not mainstream, and it stays right. with them. Yeah. So definitely, for me as a parent and as a carer, it concerns me that there's no kind of safety net for children to be able to vent, to get support for their experiences. In the main, they're basically, I think the furthest I got, because my degree was in the education faculty, the most paranormal I got was the imaginary child. That seems almost acceptable, that very gifted, often bright children are allowed to have an imaginary friend.
Yes.
Yes. So you can see how that's acceptable. Well, what's the difference between an imaginary friend and an angel or whatever in the corner? What's the difference? It's just a label, you know?
Well, I mean, I've actually dealt with kids. Their parents were worried about them. That's like, you know, he talks to somebody. It's this weird imaginary friend. I've taken him to see a psychologist. And it's upon investigation of their home, it's like, no, this is not an imaginary friend. Your child is really seeing an 85-year-old man and talking to an 85-year-old man. I got voice recordings here. I got pictures here. I got videos here. Your child is having a real experience. In my opinion, they may be psychic. Cultivate it rather than suppress it.
Absolutely. Don't be threatened by it. I think too many people are threatened by something that they don't experience themselves. But for me, again, it goes back to if it's your loved one, if it's somebody that you're emotionally connected to, a lot of people need to perhaps trust their intuition more. Shut out the chatter in the brain and say, the child before me, I know this child. I have invited this person into my life. You know, it always fascinates me that we spend so long choosing our partner and then we settle down and then we just open ourselves up to a stranger walking into our lives.
Right.
You know, and then you get to know this stranger and you think, well, I need to trust my intuition. If this child before me is talking in the corner, I need to watch and observe and gently approach. You know, right. Where's the harm? You know, enter into the game. See what it is.
Right. But you know what? Would you agree that we, like, okay, I love technology. Obviously, I must, because I wouldn't be doing this radio show right now and talking to you all the way from Australia, and I'm here in Chicago. But do you think that all the technology, all the chatter, all this mass communication and all that is killing what our ancestors knew, that they lived closer to the earth and they experienced this stuff more because there wasn't all this little, you know, like, crap going on around us at one time? Would you say that that's probably why also kids, you know, are a little bit more open to this stuff? They haven't been affected yet by the technology.
Well, that's an interesting, well, okay, that's interesting. I was speaking to a mother whose child is starting school, age 6, and he will have an iPad. That blew me out the water. I wasn't quite sure I wanted to be there.
Yeah, I'm definitely not going to give Theodore an iPad because, you know, his old man doesn't have one, so why should he?
I think he can go and mow some lawns. What do you think, Rick?
Exactly. Yeah, get a job, change the oil in my car, Theo.
So I think there is that element to it, but I think more technology brings people together, but it also isolates.
Yes.
Yeah, so there is this sense of people reaching out and connecting, but in that there's almost a void is created as well. So going back to my original thesis, when I approached the university, I started out by trying to find somebody who would supervise my thesis. Mm-hmm. I thought there's no point in applying to a university or a faculty until I can find somebody who will hang their hat with me. Sure. So I found someone. I found three people in Australia. I found three people who were interested in me doing the research. And that was invaluable. When it was the education faculty that stepped up, my original brief was going to be prodigies and the paranormal, because I'm fascinated to know the modern day Mozarts and people like that. The child who comes through with knowledge beyond their 3 to 5 years, how is that? Are they channeling? Are they bringing it into their genes? What's happening? I want to know. So that's is really where my original thesis brief was going to be, but I could not pursue that because there's been no research done on it, and I had to stand on the shoulders of someone else. But I think that's a fabulous area to go into. How is it that some kids are wise beyond their years?
See, I've oftentimes wondered that myself too, and I think, you know, in my belief system, I'm a Buddhist, so naturally, you know, I believe in reincarnation, the wheel of samsara, and I think that when you get these kids that do have this knowledge that goes well beyond 3 or 4 years old, that they're actually probably experiencing all the information that they have acquired in a former life, and somehow it just sticks with them.
That's right. And that goes back to, is it the scientists say that we don't actually think in our brains? That's a mm-hmm. misconception. We actually have body. We store the knowledge in our bodies, not necessarily in our brains. So, sure. Okay, so if they're bringing it through from a previous life, then are they storing it in their being, or are they open and channeling it from somewhere else and they happen to have the key to that channel? Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. No, I know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah. So again, there's not enough research has been done on this for anybody to be able to say much. I'm just looking at my list again here to see if anyone else is looking for a topic. The timing of the onset, of course, is the earlier in life. But one thing that I found, Rick, is that the survey scopes 10 types of paranormal experience.
Sure.
There's a couple that tend not to start until later in life. Why is that? Why is it that perhaps some of the experiences like reincarnation are often reported in the first few years of life, the first mm-hmm. experience, and yet first experiences of mediumship and seeing auras don't tend mm-hmm. to happen until later?
I've oftentimes been curious about that myself, and I have no answer for that, and I'm kind of hoping maybe you do.
No, I'm putting it out there. Anybody wants to do some research? Because again, I mean, I think the first thing is to be able to isolate the questions, and that's something that the survey is doing. It's actually defining gaping holes, and there's just, if you can quantify what the holes are, then people can fill them. There's just so much opportunity for the credibility of academic institutions to be thrown behind this paranormal research, that it could take off. We just need people who can have the time to get out there and do it.
But what do you think it's going to take for mainstream universities, mainstream science, to finally say, you know what, there may actually be something behind this? What do you think it's going to take, and do you think that we'll ever actually get there?
I think we will get there. I'm not sure it'll be in our lifetime, but I think the pattern is there. The pattern seems to be those who have established credibility can transfer that into the area of the parapsychology. I love, even though I often don't understand the scientific papers, I love to see something written by somebody with an obscure background, and they've got an academic paper. And the other thing I notice is terminology. It was really hard to find academic papers that will talk about the paranormal, because people have to use euphemisms. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
When I put my application into the university, I used so many non-paranormal terms, I nearly twisted myself, because I didn't want to frighten. I did not want them to go off when they saw the word ghost or apparition or anything else, you know?
Sure, right.
You have to play the game. If it's a university, you play the game. But there is some good stuff coming out. And I think one of the things is, of course, the near-death experience research that's coming out of, you know, coronary care units in hospitals. That's really... that's cutting edge stuff, I reckon.
Right. I mean, the the whole the near death experience. Now you hear so many different things concerning this. Now, I personally don't know what I would see, because I really don't believe in the Christian ideology of life after death. So it's like, do you think that it's when people have a near death experience, when they're like, I see this bright light and I hear like angels singing, and it's, do you think that that's actually just something biochemical in their brain giving up, or are they really honestly seeing something that is, you know, beyond what we know?
I think they are actually. I think they are actually seeing beyond what we know, and part of the reason is we look to the children again and what children report, because to me that can be fairly untainted if the adults have not got to them and nobbled them. You know what I mean? I mean, there will be people who will sow seeds, and therefore children will paraphrase what's been they've been told. There'll be others who have a near-death experience and will actually tell you things like, wow, you've actually ticked 5 of the 8 boxes. How would you know that when you're only 5 years of age? So, no.
See, another thing that interests me about near-death experiences, not only it seems that there is an over-preponderance of people are like, I saw the bright lights, I hear the angels singing, St. Peter or whomever is standing at the pearly gates waiting to let me in, and there's Jesus and grandma and all that. But then you got that small portion of people that are like, oh my God, I saw demons and there was fire and Satan was waiting for me and he was going to do sticking a pitchfork in my ass, you know. How many people, there seems to be an overpreponderance of one, but not enough of the other, which kind of makes me wonder, it's like, maybe this is why some spirits don't pass on, is because they get their heads filled with like, you know, if you did something bad, like stole a candy bar, well, you know, you're going to go straight to hell. You know, do you think that that has something to do with it?
Yeah, I have a feeling that we don't necessarily change the of who we are once we pass over. So I think there is a part of that, and that was part of my struggle to be here, was that my essence wanted to stay where it was.
Right.
So I think you're right. There's no coincidence that the Christians tend to see the angels, the Virgin Mary, that type of thing. That is obviously an externalization of what they have been fed, you know.
Right.
And I don't see that as necessarily a problem, because the brain does work in symbols and all this, so why not? I don't see that as a problem, yet I'm not sure what a Buddhist would see, but maybe it would be the Buddha. But again, I think it's more the essence. It's the energy behind the angel, the energy behind the people that they meet. So I don't see any inconsistencies, but in my survey, definitely there was a preponderance of positive news. I mean, so many people didn't want to come back. It was ridiculous. Let's face it. But then I'd agree with that. It's like, well, yeah, I know, you know, I've struggled to stay here sort of thing. You know, I can understand why you didn't want to come back. Mm-hmm. Only a few people were haunted by some dreadful scenes. You know, and I don't necessarily think that those people have done anything dreadful. I don't know why it's happened, but yeah, there's a lot of work being done in that. I think there's a couple of hospitals. Is it in Portsmouth in England? And I love the fact that these guys who are working in coronary care are open enough.
Yeah, they're cardiologists. I was recently reading that. In fact, at coasttocoastam.com, I was reading that.
Yeah, I think it's brilliant that they're prepared at their stage of careers. Obviously, they're still practicing, but they have enough standing within their profession to say, we need to add to this. You know, there's no coincidence going on here. We have enough reports, especially I think patients probably talk more to the nurses, the nursing staff, than to the doctors. So they, you know, people who are working in respite care, that type of thing, it's a privilege because the people who are perhaps on their way out from this plane have so many stories to tell for those who will sit with them.
Right. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and another thing that really has always struck me as interesting, you know, as a psychical investigator, I get called. I've actually gone to, you know, a few investigations where, you know, this kind of goes back to the near-death experience thing and crossing over to heaven or hell or whatever. You know, you meet with people and they're, you know, brought up in a very, very rigid, you know, Catholic or Christian upbringing. And it's like they're experiencing something. And right away they want to attribute it to being something demonic or satanic. And American television has a little bit to do with that as well. Mm-hmm. And then it's like when you tell them, it's like, no, you don't have a demon. You got Aunt Mabel still in your home. And they're like, oh my God, Aunt Mabel's supposed to be in heaven, you know, and no, she's still here. And I have the proof that shows it to you. Again, that's a thing that goes back to belief system. Did Aunt Mabel do something in her life that made her think that she was going to not make the cut at the pearly gates or what?
Was told. Yes. Often we're told we're fed things at an early age.
Right.
And then that stays with us. But so Aunt Mabel may not even be conscious of what drives her, but her early beliefs may have been the foundation for the rest of her life. So they become almost subliminal. She won't even know that they're a part of her.
Sure.
So, yes, absolutely. Look, I've never been on one of those investigations. Again, maybe it's because we don't have many here, but I've always sort of thought to myself, Rick, it sounds silly, but I have had experiences that I would class as paranormal, but not a lot. And it's almost like, well...
Why don't you tell us a little bit about that since you brought it up? Because now it's like you got my interest piqued. What are your personal experiences? What is it that drives Rosemary Breen?
Okay. Well, what drives me is my sense of knowing. And going on from that, I was going to say that I think in some ways, and I don't wish to sound condescending, but sometimes people are given experiences because they need them.
Absolutely.
And my feeling is that I don't need them, and I'm not given the baubles and the whistles, and that's okay. So I sit comfortably with the knowing. But I have had experiences, and let me think. Indirectly, this is one. For those presumably in England, they'll be familiar with Hampton Court.
I'm not even in England. I'm here in Chicago, Illinois, and I'm very familiar with Hampton Court, yeah.
Yeah, well, look, it's a magnificent palace on many levels. Mm-hmm. And I was there many years ago with my mum and my husband, and we were in the kitchens before they were refurbished back to how they used to look in Henry VIII's time. Mm-hmm. And we're in the kitchen, and there's a door that goes into a courtyard which is surrounded by four walls. So it's two stories high and all that. And sure. My mum was standing there, and she's about to walk out into the courtyard. And I went, Mum, you can't go out there. It's cordoned off. And she went, but. And then she realised she had just seen a ghost. Now, because I was there with her, I feel quite comfortable saying my mum has seen a ghost. And she didn't even realise she'd seen one until she went, but, and then she realised what she was about to say. So, again, it goes back to that link that you have with somebody, the intuition that you have. So that is probably the only experience that we've had of a ghost in our family.
Okay.
My experience, I guess, would have been when I was pregnant with my first child. Again, you've got the hormonal changes going on, and I hadn't even told anyone except my husband that I was pregnant. So I was 10 weeks and I started to miscarry and hadn't registered with a doctor. I was in England. I hadn't registered with a doctor, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so I hear my miscarrying and then I'm thinking, okay, the doctor came. It was really quite surreal. The doctor came to our home and he stood over at the bed and he was 6 foot six. He wore black. And he stood there like the undertaker. He stood there, he read the last rites and said, I'll see you in the morning. And I thought, what a load of twaddle. What would he know? And so I then really dug deep. I went into myself. I channeled my pink. I did my healing. I did all the stuff that I could do thinking, this guy's not right. Intuitively, I've never been pregnant before, but this guy's not right. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that night, my daughter's soul came to me.
Mm-hmm.
And the soul came in the form of a wise old man. And he stood at the end of the bed and he just looked. And he looked at me with a like, why did you call me here? I went, oh, sorry. and he went. And I told my husband and I said, it's going to be okay. This is weird, I know, but it's going to be okay. And lo and behold, it was. 3 weeks later, I started to miscarry again. He came back again. And I'm going, okay, I get it. You know, we're going to do this. It's going to be okay. So those were two things that I needed at a moment of this old soul coming through just to reassure me that everything would be fine.
But, sure.
You know, it's that kind of thing. But I was very aware that I changed my emotional, energetic level. I was really channeling. I was literally fighting for her life, you know, because I felt that she needed to come through and I was going to do my best. So, yeah. So I think in some ways people can do that. I think you can harness an energy within yourself, and whether it's to use for a positive or a poltergeist or whatever, there is an energetic component to all of this.
Well, it's interesting that you should say that the energetic component, like, you know, with the birth of our son, we had 13 failed artificial inseminations, and he finally was conceived on that third in vitro fertilization, and it was like it was something that we wanted so badly, was to have a little piece of each of us and our whole family. And it was like, it just almost seemed like everybody was focusing their attention, that energetic attention on us on that day that we went to have that third in vitro fertilization done. And man, lo and behold, 2 weeks later, we found out that, you know, my wife was pregnant. So,
really?
You know, really? I do think that there, you know, I don't want to be like all, you know, oh, it's the secret. You know, if you think positively, it's going to happen. I think that's all a bunch of bupkis. But I do think that there is, man, when you get a bunch of people focusing that kind of energy on one given thing, that, yeah, it's going to happen and it can happen.
I think you're right. And that's what some of the scientists are working with their machines, aren't they? That, you know, with the random number generators and things, you know? They are quantifying what happens when the world unifies at a moment in time, like whether it's the 9/11, you know, or whether it's the Princess Diana's funeral or whatever. Suddenly there is a quantifiable shift in the Earth's energy. Now, what is that about? You know, the science...
harmonic convergence, some of the, you know, the New Age people call it.
Exactly. So there is more... So while they're quantifying, it's like, well, you and I at a personal level... No, but it takes quite a lot to actually, doesn't it, to get the focus there. You know, you can't stay in that state with your engine revving so high. Well, probably some people can, but, you know, probably there's more the professionals within the paranormal community. But I can't keep my engine revving that high and be that too long.
Right. No, I know exactly what you're saying. I mean, that was, it was just very strange. I was like, man, everybody was just so focused on that, like, bam. And it's so weird because it's like a really good friend of mine. I'm going to be doing a lot of work with her. I mentioned her earlier, Nancy Laporta. She was the one, we kind of sort of gave each other what we needed. I gave her, you know, validation outside of something mystical that, you know, these kind of abilities do exist. And she gave me back the knowing that psychic abilities do exist. So we kind of like gave each other something. And she told me before we went in for this that it's like, if you have everybody in your family focus all their energy on you having this baby, it's going to happen. And she told me that it's going to be a boy.
Oh.
And dear God, it was. You know what I'm saying? And it happened.
Yeah. Look, again, there's so many, what's Einstein's like, there's so many spooky things happen. It's like, how does this happen? You know, I think there is this mystical component, and I think we do need this as a race. We do need to have, a mystical experience. But science will move more and more, I think, into the area that has been dominated by perhaps religion and philosophy and whatever, you know. So there is this movement. I just wish we could all talk more to each other. Then so much more knowledge could, like you're finding, you're exchanging knowledge.
Right, right.
So much more to be achieved.
Well, when you look at, you know, take, for example, alchemy, you know, the idea of transmuting base metals into precious metals. Mm-hmm. Now, let's face it, alchemists really were the early chemists, and they gave us, you know, cosmetics, and they gave us, you know, what we use today to brew beer or ferment wine, you know, and a better understanding about, you know, the chemistry of the brain and the chemistry of the human body. And I always found it very fascinating that what was considered magic 400 years ago is now considered science today.
Well, and
right. And so kind of I'm sorry, what that?
It's mainstream now.
Right. And I think that that's what's going to happen. You know, our great, 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 great grandkids are going to look back on us and they're going to be like, wow, you know, you believed in ghosts and they didn't really say, they're like, oh, no, that stuff can't possibly exist. But, you know, here we are in the 24th or 25th century. And it's like, we know that this stuff exists and it's part of our everyday, you know, scientific belief in life.
Mm.
And, you know, we're going to experience that one day and, you know, hopefully it'll be soon. But I do, you know, you talk about the mystical, and I don't know if you would agree with this, but I definitely think that when, you know, I don't want to get too mystical to the point where it sounds corny, you know what I'm saying? But I do think that one day mysticism and science are going to finally get together. The metaphysical and science will finally get together. And science is going to take them seriously, and they're going to take science seriously, and they're going to get together, and they're finally going to prove that, yes, these things do exist. Yes, people do experience these things, and there is definitely a life after death.
Look at the ancient texts. If you go through these books of wisdom, they are just filled with paranormal experiences.
Well, the Epic of Gilgamesh really can be considered the very first true ghost story.
And we accept it because we couch it with different terms.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because we call it a miracle or we give it a different label, and it is therefore considered mainstream because we've had religion and beliefs and mysticism for thousands of years. You know,
sure.
And it's all in the presentation of the details. And that's, to me, that's the thing that I found as I explored more and more. It's like, well, just because Saint Teresa of Avila saw something, it's like, well, what's the difference? You know, she's got a bit more credibility, but she just actually saw something that was probably an apparition. There's no other way. Just let's call it what it is. It was just a ghost.
Right.
It happened to be in the form of the Virgin or whatever, you know? So we can get stuck in the labels. And that was the other thing with my survey is I had to define words that I was using, but I also had to kind of neutralize it in some ways. I didn't want to have any emotive language, and I wanted to steer clear of the religious connotation, you know? It is a fairly matter of fact. I hope it's not too dry. I leave it to people to put their own content in it, but it's not too dry, you know? People can whip through it quite quickly, yeah.
With that being said, I think that, you know, it all just boils down to what we were talking about earlier about personal experience. And when people's going to start taking that a little bit more seriously, then we're going to see things begin to happen. But I think what we're going to do tonight, Rosemary, and I just want to say thank you so much for being on the show. It's such a fascinating conversation. And, you're just another one of those great guests that I hope will come back one day and, you know, sit down and talk with us. And hopefully, you know, Karen can be there because she's a little bit more on the quantum mechanics side of it. I sort of, you know, go into a corner, cry, and suck my thumb when people start talking about that area of paranormal research.
Your knowledge is complimentary.
So I just wanted to say thank you so much for being on the show. It was a fascinating conversation. And, you know, are there any websites or books or, you know, anything else that you have coming up soon that you would like to, talk about before we wrap it?
Well, we've talked about the survey a lot. My intention is for that to stay open indefinitely. I think that the only large repository of experiences is to be found in the Rhine Institute. And, of course, I think a lot of that would be probably letters rather than something that's been put onto the computer. So this is the chance for people to actually use the technology that's so with us now. And sure. I hope to have the largest database of knowledge ever accumulated. And in hindsight, I mean, this is the kind of thing that in 30 and 40 years' time, people will go back and say, oh, look here, she collected this data and this is, look, it was there, but maybe she wasn't able to interpret it. You know, we need to just start accumulating. Take it out of the chat forums and stuff. There's so much information is shared there, but you can't access it. So this is a focal point for people to go online, put their experiences down and know that they've actually contributed, you know? There's nothing in it for people except the sense of contributing to history. And, my gosh, to pull people through, you know, that was the boggling thing, is that there's no reward offered. Some surveys will give you a financial fee and whatever. No, people are doing it because they feel strongly about it. So I invite people to go into that. Come to the website, and we're developing a nice little forum there as well.
Yeah, well, I really enjoy the website. It was a great website. And I hope, you know, 20, 30 years from now when Theo is old enough that he's going to be like, hey, you know, my old man talked to this lady and I took her survey and, you know, it really meant a lot to me and I hope it means a lot to other people. So, again, Rosemary, thank you so much for joining us all the way, you know, from I'm not even sure what time it is there. Is you in, like, the middle of the night or what?
No, we're on the next day. I'm 3 o'clock on Friday afternoon.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, 10 o'clock here. But thank you so much again for coming on. And I really honestly hope that you're going to come on again. It's been a real pleasure. Mm-hmm. And I hope that Karen will get a chance to talk to you if you come on again. So,
lovely thanks, Rick. Lovely to chat.
Yeah, okay, really great talking to you. Take care and have a good night. So, it was just another one of those, you know, for our listeners, just another one of those really fascinating kind of talks where, you know, we learned a little bit about each other and, you know, hopefully with Rosemary Breen's survey, you know, we can learn not only about other people, but we can learn about ourselves. So I just kind of want to end it, you know, tonight's show with that. And you've been listening to Rosemary Breen on Paranormal Underground Radio, and I was your host, Rick Hale. And hopefully next week, Karen will be joining us. And, see you again next week. You know, I'm really bad with time zones, so I'll just say it, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. here in the beautiful city of Chicago, Illinois, and for everybody else. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Have a good night.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next week, keep exploring the unexplained at www.paranormalunderground.net and join us again next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the ZTalk Radio Network.